up next. Who's the bird brain behind door number two? You game show addicts are no doubt familiar with the format of the long-running TV show Let's Make a Deal, hosted by Monty Hall. There are three doors. Behind one of the doors is the big prize, a pile of cash or a new car or a boat. The other two doors conceal a booby prize or a zonk. You choose one of the three doors. Then, as a teaser, the show host opens one of the doors you didn't choose, revealing a zonk. Now you have a choice. Do you switch from the door you originally chose to the other unopened door, or stick with your first choice? The pressure is on. What will you do? Well, this isn't just game show trivia. This has become known as the Monty Hall problem, a famous puzzle in statistics and probability, because most people, even most mathematicians, get the answer wrong. Psychologist Dr. Wally Herbranson has been trying to explain this problem in his classes for years, not always successfully. But in a recent experiment, he figured out his problem. He's been teaching the wrong species. Dr. Herbranson is at Whitman College in Washington State. Hi, welcome to Quirks and Quarks.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Can you try to explain to me the answer to the Monty Hall problem? What should you do?
Sure. Well, the short answer is that you should always switch. And if you do, your chances will jump from winning one out of three times to winning two out of every three times. The explanation that I usually give in my statistics classes is that the likelihood that you picked the car or whatever the desirable prize is on the first guess is one in three, and most people can grasp that pretty quickly. If that's the case, then Monty Hall obviously will open up one of the doors containing a goat or zonk prize, and if you stay, you win. If you switch, you get the other goat. On the other hand, the likelihood that you picked one of the goat prizes is two out of three. Monty, of course, shows you the other goat, meaning that if you switch, you'll win. If you stay, you lose, and that'll happen roughly two-thirds of the time.
Wow, because it's funny because I think of it as I'm facing the two doors. I've got a 50-50 chance here when it's down to the two.
Yeah, that's one of the heuristics that we probably pick up either during our education or during life in general. If there's one desirable outcome and two possible choices that you can make, then the likelihood of getting the prize would be 50-50 if you just guess. Yeah. But it doesn't take into account the fact that you have a knowledgeable host who was always going to show you one of the zonk or goat prizes.
Okay. Now, why is this so difficult for people to understand?
Well, I think it's because we use classical probability to solve the problem, but we use it wrong. Classical probability would be kind of an a priori approach where you try to sketch out all of the possible outcomes ahead of time. But in the case of the Monty Hall problem, we set up the probabilities incorrectly.
Okay. So what species did you try to teach this problem to instead of humans?
I worked with pigeons. Pigeons are notoriously good at probability-based problems.
Really?
So if you... Yes.
I don't think of pigeons as mental giants.
Well, they're not in all respects. But if you set up a simple experiment where you have two buttons that you can press for a reward or a goodie. And on every trial, there's a reward to be earned. Two-thirds of the time, it'll appear on the left button. One-third of the time, it'll appear on the right button. The best thing you can do is pick the left button 100% of the time, and you'll win about two-thirds of the time. You'll lose a third of the time as well. Most humans, we still like to distribute our responses evenly between the two options.
Well, what did the pigeons do?
The pigeons like to pick the better one every time.
You're kidding.
Which is the optimal thing to do.
They stay with the one side that has a better chance of getting the food.
That's right.
So how did you set up the Monty Hall problem?
So I set up the Monty Hall problem using a simple operant chamber or Skinner box. It's got three buttons on one wall that can be illuminated with various colors of light. And then if they do what you want them to, you can give them grain. So it's a lot cheaper than the actual game show. You don't have to pay them with cars and stacks of money. You can use literally pigeon feed.
Okay. Your budget was conservative then.
That's right. That's right. And basically, I just set up a situation that was as close as I could imagine to the Monty Hall dilemma. So to begin a trial, all three keys would be illuminated with light. The pigeon would peck one of them. At that point, there would be a short delay, and one of the lights would turn off under the same constraints that Monty Hall would use to open up one of the other doors. Right? It couldn't be the key that the pigeon had pecked, and it couldn't be the one that actually had grain behind it.
Okay.
But then at that point, they would have to peck one of the remaining two keys, so they could either stay with the key that they had initially pecked, or they could switch to the key that they hadn't pecked before. And cross-training pigeons pretty quickly learn that they should switch every time.
Wow. Now, how long did it take to train the pigeons to figure this all out, that this is a problem that they need to solve?
They all were switching about 100% of the time by day 30. And on each day, they received between 10 and 100 trials. Initially, of course, they were just responding blindly. There's no effective way to explain to the pigeon what they're supposed to be doing. So they were just kind of pecking things randomly until they kind of figured out the structure of the trial.
Wow. Now, I know that you psychologists like to use graduate students because they're also cheap to feed and easy
yes.
to come by. So did you have a control group of university students to test against the pigeons?
That's right. Yeah, I ran a group of undergraduate students on the same conditions that I ran the pigeons on. And they learned to switch more, but they never switched 100% of the time. Really, the best they did is they got up to around switching about two-thirds of the time.
Wow. So why do you think the pigeons are better at making these choices than humans are?
Well, I think they choose a better tool for the job. As I mentioned before, humans tend to use classical probability, and they use it incorrectly. Pigeons, on the other hand, probably take an approach that mathematicians would call empirical probability. And that involves simply watching what happens and going with what worked in the past. So the pigeons would try different things, and if something worked consistently more than something else worked, then it would become more likely, and eventually that was all they would do.
Boy, so we think about it too much, in other words.
Basically, in this case, maybe less is more.
It works for the pigeons.
That's right. The difference between pigeons and humans actually is nicely illustrated by a famous anecdote. Paul Erdős, who's considered to be the Babe Ruth of mathematics, was presented with the Monty Hall dilemma, and he actually refused to accept explanations of why switching was better that were based on classical probability. He was only convinced later when somebody showed him a computer simulation that ran through hundreds of trials of the Monty Hall dilemma and showed incontrovertibly that switching was better. So basically, until he was able to approach the problem like a pigeon via empirical probability, he was unable to embrace the correct solution.
So do you think the pigeons could beat us at Jeopardy, too?
It might depend on what the questions were about.
If they're mathematical, right?
Dr. Hibratz, the trick would be getting them to respond effectively.
Okay, well, multiple choice, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
Dr. Hibranson, thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you. It's been nice to talk with you.
Dr. Wally Hibranson is a professor of psychology at Whitman College in Washington State. Coming up, being mean to your web-footed friends.